Chapter 51. Willems moved languidly towards the river, then retraced his steps to the tree, and let himself fall on the seat under its shade. On the other side of the immense trunk he could hear the old woman moving about, sighing loudly, muttering to herself, snapping dry sticks, blowing up the fire. After a while a whiff of smoke drifted round to where he sat. It made him feel hungry, and that feeling was like a new indignity added to an intolerable load of humiliations. He felt inclined to cry. He felt very weak. He held up his arm before his eyes, and watched for a little while the trembling of the lean limb. Skin and bone, by God! How thin he was! He had suffered from fever a good deal, and now he thought with tearful dismay that lingered, although he had sent him food and what food, great Lord! A little rice and dried fish, quite unfit for a white man had not sent him any medicine. Did the old savage think that he was like the wild beasts that are never ill? He wanted quinine. He leaned the back of his head against the tree and closed his eyes. He thought feebly that, if he could get hold of Lingard he would like to flay him alive, but it was only a blurred, a short and a passing thought. His imagination, exhausted by the repeated delineations of his own fate, had not enough strength left to grip the idea of revenge. He was not indignant and rebellious. He was cowed. He was cowed by the immense cataclysm of his disaster. Like most men, he had carried solemnly within his breast the whole universe, and the approaching end of all things and the destruction of his own personality filled him with paralyzing awe. Everything was toppling over. He blinked his eyes quickly, and it seemed to him that the very sunshine of the morning disclosed in its brightness a suggestion of some hidden and sinister meaning. In his unreasoning fear he tried to hide within himself. He drew his feet up, his head sank between his shoulders, his arms hugged his sides. Under the high and enormous tree soaring superbly out of the mist in a vigorous spread of lofty boughs, with a restless and eager flutter of its innumerable leaves in the clear sunshine, he remained motionless, huddled up on his seat, terrified and still. Willem's gaze roamed over the ground, and then he watched with idiotic fixity half a dozen black ants centering courageously a tuft of long grass which, to them, must have appeared a dark and a dangerous jungle. Suddenly he thought, there must be something dead in there. Some dead insect. Death everywhere. He closed his eyes again in an access of trembling pain. Death everywhere wherever one looks. He did not want to see the ants. He did not want to see anybody or anything. He sat in the darkness of his own making, reflecting bitterly that there was no peace for him. He heard voices now. Illusion. Misery. Torment. Who would come? Who would speak to him? What business had he to hear voices? Yet he heard them faintly, from the river. Faintly, as if shouted far off over there, came the words, "We come back soon." Delirium and mockery. Who would come back? Nobody ever comes back. Fever comes back. He had it on him this morning. That was it. He heard unexpectedly the old woman muttering something nearby. As he had come round to his side of the tree, he opened his eyes and saw her bent back before him. She stood, with her hand shading her eyes, looking towards the landing place. Then she glided away. As he had seen, and now she was going back to her cooking, a woman incurious, expecting nothing, without fear and without hope. As he had gone back behind the tree, and now Willems could see a human figure on the path to the landing place. It appeared to him to be a woman, in a red gown, holding some heavy bundle in her arms. It was an apparition unexpected, familiar and odd. He cursed through his teeth. It had wanted only this. See things like that in broad daylight. He was very bad, very bad. He was horribly scared at this awful symptom of the desperate state of his health. This scare lasted for the space of a flash of lightning, and in the next moment it was revealed to him that the woman was real, that she was coming towards him, that she was his wife. He put his feet down to the ground quickly, but made no other movement. His eyes opened wide. He was so amazed that for a time he absolutely forgot his own existence. The only idea in his head was, why on earth did she come here? Joanna was coming up the courtyard with eager, hurried steps. She carried in her arms the child, wrapped up in one of Almayer's white blankets that S.E. had snatched off the bed at the last moment, before leaving the house. She seemed to be dazed by the sun in her eyes, bewildered by her strange surroundings. She moved on, looking quickly right and left in impatient expectation of seeing her husband at any moment. Then, approaching the tree, she perceived suddenly a kind of a dried-up, yellow corpse, sitting very stiff on a bench in the shade, and looking at her with big eyes that were alive. That was her husband. She stopped dead short. They stared at one another in profound stillness, with astounded eyes, with eyes maddened by the memories of things far off that seemed lost in the lapse of time. Their looks crossed, past each other, and appeared to dart at them through fantastic distances, to come straight from the incredible. Looking at him steadily, she came nearer, and deposited the blanket with the child, in it on the bench. Little Louis, after howling with terror in the darkness of the river most of the night, now slept soundly, and did not wake. Willem's eyes followed his wife, his head turning slowly after her. He accepted her presence there with a tired acquiescence in its fabulous improbability. Anything might happen. What did she come for? She was part of the general scheme of his misfortune. He half expected that she would rush at him, pull his hair, and scratch his face. Why not? Anything might happen. In an exaggerated sense of his great bodily weakness, he felt somewhat apprehensive of possible assault. At any rate, she would scream at him. He knew her of old. She could screech. He had thought that he was rid of her forever. She came now probably to see the end. Suddenly she turned, and embracing him slid gently to the ground. This startled him. With her forehead on his knees she sobbed noiselessly. He looked down dismally at the top of her head. What was she up to? He had not the strength to move to get away. He heard her whispering something, and bent over to listen. He caught the word, Orgive. That was what she came for. All that way. Women are queer. Forgive. Not he. All at once this thought darted through his brain. How did she come? In a boat. 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 He shouted out, and jumped up, knocking her over. Before she had time to pick herself up, he pounced upon her, and was dragging her up by the shoulders. No sooner had she regained her feet than she clasped him tightly round the neck, covering his face, his eyes, his mouth, his nose with desperate kisses. He dodged his head about, shaking her arms, trying to keep her off, to speak, to ask her. She came in a boat, boat, boat. They struggled and swung round, tramping in a semicircle. He blurted out, leave off. Listen, while he tore at her hands. This meeting of lawful love and sincere joy resembled fight. Louis Willem slept peacefully under his blanket. At last Willems managed to free himself, and held her off, pressing her arms down. He looked at her. He had half a suspicion that he was dreaming. Her lips trembled. Her eyes wandered unsteadily, always coming back to his face. He saw her the same as ever, in his presence. She appeared startled, tremulous, ready to cry. She did not inspire him with confidence. He shouted, "How did you come?" She answered in hurried words, looking at him intently, in a big canoe with three men. "I know everything. Lingard's away. I come to save you. I know. Almayer told me. Canoe. Almayer lies. Told you. Stammered Willems in a distracted manner. I you? Told what? Words failed him. He stared at his wife, thinking with fear that she stupid woman had been made a tool in some plan of treachery in some deadly plot. She began to cry, "Don't look at me like that, Peter. What have I done? I come to beg forgiveness. Save Lingard danger." He trembled with impatience, with hope, with fear. She looked at him and sobbed out in a fresh outburst of grief, "Oh, Peter, what's the matter? Are you ill? Oh, you look so ill." He shook her violently into a terrified and wondering silence. "How dare you? I am well, perfectly well. Where's that boat? Will you tell me where that boat is at last?" "The boat, I say. You hurt me," she moaned. He let her go, and, mastering her terror, she stood quivering and looking at him with strange intensity. Then she made a movement forward, but he lifted his finger, and she restrained herself with a long sigh. He calmed down suddenly, and surveyed her with cold criticism, with the same appearance as when, in the old days, he used to find fault with the household expenses. She found a kind of fearful delight in this abrupt return into the past, into her old subjection. He stood outwardly collected now, and listened to her disconnected story. Her words seemed to fall round him with the distracting clatter of stunning hail. He caught the meaning here and there, and straightway would lose himself in a tremendous effort to shape out some intelligible theory of events. There was a boat. A boat. A big boat, that could take him to sea if necessary. That much was clear. She brought it. Why did Almayer lie to her so? Was it a plan to decoy him into some ambush? Better that than hopeless solitude. As he had money. The men were ready to go anywhere. She said. He interrupted her, "Where are they now?" "They are coming directly," she answered, tearfully. "Directly. There are some fishing stakes near here," they said. "They are coming directly." Again she was talking and sobbing together. She wanted to be forgiven. Forgiven? What for? Ah, the scene in Macassar. As if he had time to think of that. What did he care what as he had done months ago? He seemed to struggle in the toils of complicated dreams where everything was impossible, yet a matter of course, where the past took the aspects of the future, and the present lay heavy on his heart seemed to take him by the throat like the hand of an enemy. And while she begged, entreated, kissed his hands, wept on his shoulder, adjured him in the name of God, to forgive, to forget, to speak the word for which he longed, to look at his boy, to believe in her sorrow and in her devotion, his eyes, in the fascinated immobility of shining pupils, looked far away, far beyond her, beyond the river, beyond this land, through days, weeks, months, looked into liberty, into the future, into his triumph, into the great possibility of a startling revenge. He felt a sudden desire to dance and shout. He shouted, "After all, we shall meet again, Captain Lingard." "Oh, no, no," she cried, joining her hands. He looked at her with surprise. He had forgotten she was there till the break of her cry and the monotonous tones of her prayer recalled him into that courtyard from the glorious turmoil of his dreams. It was very strange to see her there near him. He felt almost affectionate towards her. After all, she came just in time. Then he thought, "That other one. I must get away without a scene. Who knows, she may be dangerous." And all at once he felt he hated Asa with an immense hatred that seemed to choke him. He said to his wife, "Wait a moment." She, obedient, seemed to gulp down some words which wanted to come out. He muttered, "Colon, stay here," and disappeared round the tree. The water in the iron pan on the cooking fire boiled furiously, belching out volumes of white steam that mixed with the thin black thread of smoke. The old woman appeared to him through this, as if in a fog, squatting on her heels, impassive and weird. Willems came up near and asked, "Where is she?" The woman did not even lift her head, but answered at once, readily, as though as he had expected the question for a long time. "While you were asleep under the tree, before the strange canoe came, she went out of the house. I saw her look at you, and pass on with a great light in her eyes. A great light. And she went towards the place, where our master Lacamba had his fruit trees. When we were many here. Many, many. Men with arms by their side. many. Dot dot men. And talk dot 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 and songs dot dot. She went on like that, raving gently to herself for a long time after Willems had left her. Willems went back to his wife. He came up close to her and found he had nothing to say. Now all his faculties were concentrated upon his wish to avoid Asa. She might stay all the morning in that grove. Why did those rascally boatmen go? He had a physical repugnance to set eyes on her. And somewhere, at the very bottom of his heart, there was a fear of her. Why? What could she do? Nothing on earth could stop him now. He felt strong, reckless, pitiless, and superior to everything. He wanted to preserve before his wife the lofty purity of his character. He thought, she does not know. Almayer held his tongue about Asa. But if she finds out, I am lost. If it hadn't been for the boy, I would. Dot dot free of both of them. Dot 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 the idea darted through his head. Not he. Married. Dot dot swore solemnly. No. Dot dot sacred tie. Dot 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 looking on his wife, he felt for the first time in his life something approaching remorse. Remorse, arising from his conception of the awful nature of an oath before the altar. Dot 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 she mustn't find out. Dot 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 oh, for that boat. He must run in and get his revolver. Couldn't think of trusting himself unarmed with those Bajo fellows. Get it now, while she is away. Oh, for that boat. Dot dot he dared not go to the river and hail. He thought, she might hear me. Dot 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 I'll go and get dot 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 cartridges dot 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 then we'll be all ready. Dot dot nothing else. No. And while he stood meditating profoundly, before he could make up his mind to run to the house, Joanna pleaded, holding to his arm pleaded despairingly, broken-hearted, hopeless whenever she glanced up at his face, which to her seemed to wear the aspect of unforgiving rectitude, of virtuous severity, of merciless justice. And she pleaded humbly abashed before him, before the unmoved appearance of the man as he had wronged in defiance of human and divine laws. He heard not a word of what she said till she raised her voice in a final appeal, dot 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 don't you see I loved you always? They told me horrible things about you. Dot dot my own mother. They told me you have. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.